Welcome back in everyone to a wonderful new episode of Whisper in the Wings. We are so excited to be bringing you once again coverage of the New York City Fringe Festival. We are so pumped up about this. If you remember last year, it was such a blast. The artists were amazing. And this year is even bigger and better than ever. The New York City Fringe Festival runs April 3rd through the 21st, and this year it is split between three venues at Under St. Mark's, The Wild Project, and 14Y Theater. You can get your tickets and information right now by visiting frigid.nyc. On today's show, we have several of the shows that will be performing at Under St. Mark's this year, and we are so excited to bring them to you. We have the shows Death of a Dandelion, Please Let Me Save You, A Series of Wildfires, A Little Less Than Kind, The Climate Fables, Debating Extinction, and The Trash Garden, and then Emil Amok, Lost NPR host, A Wily Filipino, and Other Stories. It's an amazing group that we have joining us today, and we cannot wait to dive into their works. So let's go ahead and welcome on our guests. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Morning.
Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
Hey, listeners.
Good morning.
Yes, let the cacophony of sounds begin. Very full house today, and I'm so excited. What a wonderful lineup we have. I would love to start by having all of you tell our listeners a little bit about your show. And Emil, if we could start first with you, that would be amazing.
Sure. Well, you know, people might know of, say, John Leguizamo's Latin History for Dummies. I don't insult people by calling them dummies. I just assume their ignorance. And I go into Filipino history for everyone else. And it's something that I have lived because I am a direct descendant of one of the first Filipinos to come to America as a colonized Filipino in 1928. And I tell his story. And from his story, it kind of explains my story. And so that's what my show is about. When I say lost NPR host, I was an NPR host and I was lost. And I'm trying to find myself again under St. Mark's. I'm a wily Filipino. That's a reference to a Steve Martin New Yorker piece in 1998, which I misunderstood. I thought he was being anti-Filipino. And I'm sorry, Steve. I want to be in your show. No, but no, really, I misunderstood it. That was like more than 20 years ago. But he was actually talking about how we don't know Filipino. So I'm, you know, I'm the wily Filipino, or maybe my father's the wily Filipino because his name was Willie. So I talk about him a lot. And then vegan trans dad, because, you know, I am vegan and I am a trans dad. Now, what that means exactly, I know some people say, well, Emil, are you trans? Are you just a dad of a trans? You'll have to find out.
I love it. What a great show.
Well, I hope. I don't know. I just talk about it. I don't have to do it now. So
jumping over to Patrick Bond with The Climate Fables, Debating Extinction, and The Trash Garden. Can you tell us a little bit about your show?
Of course. So The Climate Fables are a series of plays. It's a canon of plays that I've written about climate change. And so far, six scripts exist. But Debating Extinction and The Trash Garden are the two plays that we have brought forward that we've been touring for a year that we're bringing to the New York City Fringe. And so these are two plays about climate change that we're doing at the Fringe on alternating nights. And they tell a complete story. So The Trash Garden is based in Old Testament folklore. It's the last two people on Earth, Atlas and Evelyn, who are in the trash garden as opposed to the Garden of Eden. And they're performed really whimsically by two trained clowns, Kristen Hoffman and Louis Feliciano. And this is our comedy at the end of the world that we hope people are going to be able to look at the worst possible climate scenario and get a laugh out of it and get refreshment out of it and be able to face these climate questions in a way that is using comedy to keep audiences engaged in the real environmental material. Our other play is called Debating Extinction, which is about a young climate refugee couple deciding whether to have children on an inhospitable planet. It takes place maybe 100 years in our future. And it's based on Rapunzel and Grimm's fairy tales. There's a witch involved. There's magic in this play. It's more magical realism. And so these two pieces are set in different moments in a possible future of climate change, but they speak to each other if audiences manage to come see both. We performed these at Edinburgh Fringe last summer, and this is our return to New York, and we're so excited to be doing it.
It's amazing. Wonderful. JJ Ivy, you have the show Death of a Dandelion. Can you tell us about that?
I do, yes. So Death of a Dandelion is my one-person show where I get to play my grandma, Mama Judy. It's kind of her life story and very much in loving memory of her. She's not dead or anything. She's just far enough away that she can't kick my butt for doing it. So, and I love her story because she's been through a lot. And if you know anything about gardening, dandelions are darn near impossible to kill, which is very much like my grandmother.
I love that. That is a great plot there.
Thank you.
I would love to talk to now Gracie Rittenberg about your show, A Little Less Than Kind.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. A Little Less Than Kind is a modern comedic gender bent Hamlet adaptation. And so I wrote it a few years ago and for myself to star in. And it, so the main character Hamlet has been changed into Hannah, who's like a 21-year-old bisexual college student whose mother has just died. And then she's visited by the ghost of her mother. And I've changed a couple of genders, but kept a couple the same. So Ophelia's still a woman. And it's set in like a Silicon Valley, like tech companies. Like that's how I've adapted the empires and courts and stuff. And it's called A Little Less Than Kind because Hamlet's first line in Hamlet is when Claudius is giving the speech about the wedding and says, "In our dear Hamlet," and he goes, "A little more than kin, a little less than kind." So that's why I named it that.
Very cool.
Kaya
Lynn Kugel with the show Please Let Me Save You. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, so Please Let Me Save You is what I would call a bit of a dark comedy. I wrote it with my creative partner, Ariella Carmel. She was not able to make it today, so I'm kind of representing the both of us. We both wrote it and we are starring in it. But it's about two sisters who are not only living in the wake of having lost their mother, but one of the characters has had a recent near-death experience in which she claims to have seen Jesus Christ himself. And she comes out of this experience basically a born-again Christian, very concerned about her sister's soul. And the whole play is basically a plea of, please let me save you. And something interesting that I do want to mention that we challenged ourselves to do is it's about a 50-minute to an hour show, and we don't leave the stage at all. There's no scene changes at all. It's just the two of us having a continuous conversation, sometimes arguments, sometimes, you know, sisterly makeup sessions for about an hour, just exploring the relationship between two people who are so close. And when you think you know somebody and then something happens, life happens, and then all of a sudden you don't recognize the person in front of you, how do you continue onward?
Oh, very cool. And bringing us home, we've got Deborah DeGeorge Harbin with her show, A Series of Wildfires.
Hi, yeah. My show is A Series of Wildfires. And it's an autobiographical one-woman show, basically about leaving my journey of leaving conservative religion and discovering myself. From birth, I've been kind of this like passionate, loud, emotional, burning creature, you know? And I was really young when I figured out that that was not going to serve me within the evangelical Christian community I was growing up in. So my show really chronicles the different ways that I tried to manage that conflict. Like, do I like kill it? Like, do I like kill off the self? Do I closet my elemental self? And then a big way that I tried was to just burn extra hard for Jesus. And so then ultimately it's sort of chronicling my burning down to ash and then emerging, you know, like a phoenix into what I am now, which is still in this process of burning and revival.
That is so wonderful. I'm living for all of these. So listeners, as you can hear, so far the lineup at the New York City Fringe is incredible. What great stories we have so far. And I want to dive a little bit deeper into these. And I want to start with you, Slaney Jordan, who's with A Little Less Than Kind. What has it been like developing your work?
Yes, so I am the director for this show. And fun story about finding this, I was working as a producer for a theater called Super Secret Arts and was sent by my artistic director at the time to go see the stage reading of A Little Less Than Kind. It has a bit of a commentary on tech industry, Hamlet itself, but also on improv comedy, which which is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern in this telling is an improv duo. So it has a fun commentary where it kind of makes fun of all those things, as well as being a tragedy. I come from an improv background, so I was excited to see it. And that's where I actually met Gracie. And then a few years later, post-pandemic, we met up again and realized that it was that we had met there. And when Gracie was bringing it to New York Fringe, she asked me to direct it because I had seen it and responded so well to it. It's a really fun take on Hamlet, exploring more of the mother-daughter relationships in it and those complexities that come out of it. It kind of creates a whole different dynamic. And it's been really fun to explore that and cast based off of that. We are actually headed into rehearsals on Sunday. So we're still pretty fresh in the process. This will be the premiere of the play, will be at New York City Fringe. So the workshopping aspect has been done through the stage reading. And then Gracie and I met to kind of, you know, see how we could update it with even more kind of the turn of, you know, how tech has affected our mental states a lot of the times, you know, that with being how Ophelia and Hannah communicate a lot of the time, things can get lost in translation, that type of stuff, you know. So it's been interesting to adapt it even further past what we saw pre-pandemic and be able to expand on the playing with space and being in a full production of this show. I just can't wait. I'm so excited. The use of swords has been updated, you know, to tasers, you know, so it's silly a lot of the times, you know, and it's a fun kind of like, you know, commentary on Shakespeare's, you know, the outlandish kind of view of what Hamlet is to us as a modern day society, but also keeping that aggression and that tragedy in what makes sense for 2024. So that's been the fun kind of challenge is with the female centric, the focus on female dynamics is what I'm really excited to get into in rehearsal.
It's fabulous. Penelope Dean, you are with the Climate Fables. What has it been like developing the two shows?
It's been really exciting because it's been really wonderful to think about the planet and how beautiful it is and how much I care about it, how much we care about it. It's just important to start there. And it's been really cool to take these stories that mean so much to people, Rapunzel, Adam and Eve, and flip it around and get people to think about things differently. And it's been beautiful to work with people that I love, with people that care about me, to travel the world with them, to go to Edinburgh, to perform it here a year ago. It's just been a blessing. And it's a joy to be there. Even when we're doing our tragedy, it's great to be in the room with us because we care about a lot of different things. And it's good to be in a room with people that care.
That was a wonderful answer. I love it.
Aww.
JJ, how has it been going developing Death of a Dandelion?
It's actually kind of terrifying. So this is my first time ever writing a solo show or performing a solo show. are doing anything like this, really. So pretty much I wanted to write this because I was stuck with my grandma during the early days of COVID. And I realized that I didn't know who she was at all, other than just being this mythic grandmother lady. So this really came out of a need to actually explore my relationship with my grandmother as an adult and what that means for me, how being who she is has shaped who I am today. And so trying to figure out how to actually write this down has been a really fun journey, which really just means I had a lot of moments where I spent 20 minutes trying to help her figure out how to turn on FaceTime, and then another hour trying to get her to answer hard questions that she's like, no one wants to hear about that. No one needs to know about that. So yeah, it's been very interesting. And I actually haven't started full rehearsals for it yet. So I'll be doing that next week. So I'm excited to see how my director is going to interpret what I've written.
Love it. I now want to ask some of our artists, what is the message or thought you hope that audiences will take away from your work? And Patrick, I'm going to start with you and the climate fables.
Absolutely. So first, I just want to tell a quick story about one of the first times that we ever did the trash garden specifically. And this was the first production of any climate fable that went up. And this was in 2021. And it was a staged reading that was performed very simply in Williamsburg. And no spoilers, but at the end of the show, there is a hurricane that becomes very problematic for the main characters. And we set it up with the sound and lights and the performance. And this ended up being the night of Hurricane Ida in New York City, which was this flash tropical storm. And so we're performing the Trash Garden for audiences live the first time ever. And I swear to God that the ceiling of the theater starts leaking on stage and on the audience. And as we're reading the stage directions, lightning strike, there's a sky roof and we can see it. And people realize, oh, there's something alchemical between the stage and the outside that's happening. And so then the conclusion happens by itself for audiences, which is that we're in the thick of it. We're in the thick of climate change. It's already happening and it's time to face, here's what we're looking at and how do we survive and find humanity in it, I think is what these questions are about. And then when we did Debating Extinction and the Trash Garden last year at New Perspectives, where Penelope works, the day after was this day of the Canadian wildfire smog. And we didn't know that that was going to happen, but everyone saw this show and the next day the sky was red and the sun was red. And this is written in the plays. I wrote this in 2019. The red sun over and over. And so performing these in tandem with real climate events, I think has jolted something in our audiences of, we all know climate change is happening. I don't think there's anyone in our audience that's going to be like, well, it's just warm today. But figuring out how to live in it and how to stay human in it and how to live, like, for yourself, but also how to live for the planet, I think is what we're interested in people taking away from our work. Yeah.
Very cool. What an exciting story as well. That's amazing. Emil, what about you? What do you hope audiences take away from your show?
Well, you know, I'm actually glad you asked that, because as Patrick was talking, I was thinking, God, what do I want to, you know, because I'm here in California and I know what it's like to have the wildfires right there on your doorstep and then the smoke go all the way across the country to New York. So I'm into that. I made me think when you were saying that. So, you know, race is a very real issue still, right? And, you know, this is the end of Black History Month. And, you know, I'm Filipino. No one knows about Filipinos. I mean, that's, even Filipinos don't know about Filipinos. And so I thought, wouldn't it be great for people to understand that if you're a Filipino first, what does it mean to be the first colonized Filipino to come to America in 1928? I'm a direct descendant of that. That's like, if you're a direct descendant of a slave, what is that like? What is it like to be the first insurrectionist to go against the Americans and try to fight for your freedom? That was the Filipinos in 1898. What was it like to be you know, a first Filipino here in the 1930s to face the kind of things that we're facing now in terms of how people were treating immigrants. You know, we took Filipinos took jobs, but we also took women. We took their women, and that did not endure us to white males in the 1930s. And so this is sort of I want to give people a sense that, you know, a lot of things we're experiencing today is kind of historic. And a lot of if we understand American history, we know that we have been cycling through this for a long time. So that's part of my story. And then the other part of my story is it's just kind of funny. There's some funny things. I mean, the more tragedy, right? It's got to be funny. So there's a little, you know, stand up in it. And there's a little, you know, Kaya was talking about, oh, she's there the entire hour. I'm there the entire hour. I never get off. And so by the time it ends, you're going to want me to get off. I have done these kind of solo things for a while. And I just want people to say, you know, I got into this because I met Spalding Gray years ago. And that was like one of the highlights in my theatrical experience to have met him. And I said, God, here's a white guy talking neurotically about his white experience. Could a Filipino guy talk that way and engage people and have people come to Under St. Mark's? And that has been kind of my pep talk all throughout the years.
That is incredible. Wow. Deborah, with your show, A Series of Wildfires, what is the message or thought you hope audiences take away?
Yeah, so The show obviously it's intensely personal and it's about the dualities within myself, dualities, maybe dryalities, but the show ends with a quote from Carl Jung. And the first half of the quote, when I first heard it, you know, it sounded so religious to me and it struck so many of those like religious triggers for me, religious touch points. And it reads like this: you yourself are a conflict that rages in itself and against itself to melt its incompatible substances in the fire of suffering. And for me, like, this evokes Jonathan Edwards' Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. I hear it as if it's about good and evil and about like fighting the evil inside of yourself. But then the quote continues and it says, do not doubt the rightness of the two sides within you and let whatever may happen, happen. And for me, this has been so transformative, this idea that ourselves, even when they are in conflict with themselves, are good. Our passions are good. The fire that burns within us is not for putting out and it is not disposable. It's essential. And that our elemental self will fight for its own survival. And so that is what I hope that people take away, to not doubt the rightness of the two sides within them.
I love that. So well put. Kaya, I want to jump to you with this next question. And I'm curious to know, who do you hope have access to Please Let Me Save You?
I really hope that anyone who can relate to feeling alienated from people that you love, once loved, or are supposed to love can enjoy this show. I think this is something that I think a lot of us experienced, I would say, starting in 2016 when Donald Trump was elected. I grew up Catholic, so, you know, like, my family being supportive of him wasn't terribly shocking, but I felt like things made like a very marked turn, or things took a very marked turn rather. Like, things just felt dark and people were saying things that, you know, I never thought would hit my ears, that I just couldn't believe. And I'm having arguments with like my grandma, like JJ is I think alluding to a little bit potentially. And about 3 years after Donald Trump was elected, my mom died. And I was trying to reconcile family and keeping her memory alive with massive, massive disagreements about just the nature of the world. And so our play is about two sisters, close as you can be, who are having a very, very big life-changing disagreement. And, you know, the ending is a little bit, it's a little bit open-ended. I think I'm excited for audiences to be able to interpret it the way that they see fit. But I just, again, I think it's something that we've all experienced. We've all experienced having to have difficult conversations, I think, with the ones we love. And then when the dust kind of settles, you're kind of left there looking at each other like, well, where do we go from here? How do we go on? Because tomorrow's not promised for anybody. Yeah, I would say that about sums it up.
That's fantastic. Kristen Hoffman, you are with the Climate Fables. Who do you hope have access to your works?
Wow. Honestly, I want everyone to be able to see this show. In particular, it'd be really, really cool if we can get some like climate deniers. And if there's any way that we could be like, hey, let's soften you up, especially with the two modes in which we're telling this collective story. You know, one of my favorite parts about working on this double build project is that it goes into the realm of drama and comedy. So whatever softens your heart or brings you into this world, it would be really nice to, you know, change some people. Or for some people who are already like in the climate fight, let's call it that, that it pushes them forward to want to do something about it, at the very least to talk about it. So yeah, I want everyone to come see this show. I will say one time we ran it and there was a young boy, maybe 12 or 11, who came to see our show in Edinburgh. Stop, Penny. And I'm no spoilers, but there's a very dramatic moment that happens in debating extinction. And I remember just looking at this little boy with his dad and his face was, I don't know if this is like, it was just totally dropped open. And then later the father came to us and was like, you know, you guys gave me a lot of good conversation points to discuss with my son. So family friendly, if you're willing to have that conversation with your kids.
I love that. Yes. Rounding us out, Gracie, with your fantastic show, A Little Less Than Kind, who do you hope have access?
Well, it's always such a hard question because sometimes you're like, I just want everyone to see it. So it's a Shakespeare adaptation, which I feel like brings a certain type of person to the audience who, you know, like Shakespeare or like theater in general. Oh, Patrick, yeah, I'm dying to see your show too, by the way. So we will be meeting up. Yeah, let's get coffee. But I adapted Hamlet. So I feel like when people think Hamlet, they think tragedy. It's so upsetting. Hamlet's annoying. or that's what I've heard. But I would love people who don't really know anything about Hamlet to see this play and to think about what they get from it. And there's just a quote from the late great Sinead O'Connor that I was thinking of this morning in relation to this play, which is, she commented on a New York Times article and wrote, "It is no measure of health to be well adjusted in a profoundly sick society." So to me, that relates to Hamlet a lot because Hamlet is so much about mental health. And I thought about that when I was writing this, because I feel like there's a lot about like how people, you know, go crazy or lose their mental health, like due to their family and the care that they receive. And then, so like, oh, we can just judge the family and the parents. And then you talk to every single person you ever meet is like, well, here's how my family impacted me. And isn't there like, okay, should we maybe stop saying that like everyone's mentally unhealthy because of their family, if it turns out, and like judging everyone for that, if it turns out that a lot of people have problems, but they're all different, like, shouldn't we just be more accepting? So I wanted, like, and in the complicated relationships with mothers and daughters, I wanted people to think about, like, I feel like there's a strange feedback loop about mothers and daughters where people are like, oh, the daughter screwed up, probably her mom's fault, or like, oh, the mom's upset, it's probably the daughter's fault. And it's like, you can just keep blaming both of them back and forth. And I just, we all need to give each other a little more grace and understanding. And so that's what I hope. But yeah, I would love people who have never seen Hamlet to see this play, partially because they might not know what happens at the end. Like the first time I saw Hamlet, I didn't know everyone was, you know, yeah, I didn't know how that was going to end. I should have, because I know how tragedies end, but I was like, what? So I hope someone has that experience in my audience.
part of our interviews, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And with such a full house, we usually can't get to all of our questions, but there is one that I can't let all of you go without asking. And that, of course, is our favorite question, which is, what is your favorite theater memory? Deb, go ahead, kick us off.
All right, I'm willing to kick us off. So it's been a while since I've done any big theater projects because my daughter was born in 2017. And so she's just getting to the age where like, kind of, yeah. Thanks, guys. She's just getting to the age where I can kind of do stuff again. But the last big show that I toured was called Ruts, the Oregon Trail Experience. And it was, I toured fringe festivals with it. And it was, it's like about the video game, the Oregon Trail. It's like a MIDI music mashup. So we had done this thing where we went from New Hampshire, where I was living at the time, all the way down to Asheville, North Carolina. We drove for 2 days in a snowstorm. We got there. We like get to the theater. We're going to do that like a final run in the space before we've got to go on. I rarely direct. My actors have fallen apart. Like they run the show and it's not a show. Like, and I'm like, okay, well, we got to perform it in like 45 minutes. So I do the thing that I've seen other directors do so many times. I just like bring them all together. I'm like, listen, guys, I know that didn't go. Like, I just put on a mask, right? I'm like, listen, guys, I know that didn't go the way that you thought it should go. But you know what? I know you. I trust you. I have faith that you know this show. Just get out there and have fun. And I was like, that's not going to work. And then in 45 minutes, they ran the show and it was perfect. Never before did we do it better. Never again did we do it better. It was a perfect show. And I was like, it's theater magic. Theater magic is real. So that's my favorite.
I love that. Wonderful story. Patrick, yes. Yes. What is yours?
Well, in 2022, I had this really wonderful opportunity to tour as an apprentice company member with One Year Lease, which is a theater company that operates between New York City and Greece. And so we were doing a production of Antigone in northern Greece, way in the mountains, and we're hiking from town to town, going to the town square, banging pots and pans, saying the play is starting in Greek, Iparastisi Archisi, and gathering anyone who is in the town to come see the show. And we would perform at sundown, and then the next day we would hike to the next town. And I was playing Tiresias and in Antigone, and we were doing this production in the original Greek as an offering to the citizens there who really didn't speak English. And we were hiking through these valleys to get to these towns as an offering of, here's our effort to come all the way to you. And there was this one town called Ano Kleidonia that had a population of 4 people, and the whole town came. There were 4 people in our audience. But our company was made up of 40 people. And so we came into the town, we gathered just these, like a father and a son and this one old couple, and sat them down. And we did this huge performance of Antigone for them with all these people surrounding them and celebrating their town. And I know I keep talking about hurricanes and stuff, but it started to rain really heavily during that performance. And we all agreed to let ourselves get wet and to take all of our umbrellas and shelter our audience of 4 people. And just that moment of no one said it, no one spoke it. We all just knew they must be dry. We'll get drenched. And then we had dinner with them after and just celebrated these people. Just by being there, we created this kind of party for them. And this old man named Nikos, he spoke this in Greek, but had a translator and was saying, this is the most life that has ever been in this town. And this is, all these buildings are stone buildings. They're decrepit. They're falling apart. And he says, you know, we don't have electricity. The young people seek the city. They want life. And I don't blame them for leaving. The nature here is lovely, but that's all that could have people stay. And the idea that 40, some Greeks, but that Americans, who we think are the culture takers, would come all the way out here in the mountains and do something for us to honor us, just 4 of us, was really moving to them. And we just threw a big party, and it was the biggest party the town had had in 80 years. And that's what theater can do, I think. And that maybe just is my favorite memory, period.
That is amazing. What a story. Thank you for that. JJ, yes.
Yeah, so I think my favorite theater memory brings me back almost 20 years. I was working at a children's theater in Gainesville, Florida, and we were doing a production of Once on This Island for the community at the Alachua County Library. And it's a whole other conversation about whether or not I should have been in that production, but this was educational theater and we only had so many students. So I'm a little whitey white for that show, but we did it anyways, and it was fantastic. But since we were such a small production, we were using tracks to perform with. And right as we're getting to the finale of the story and Timon has been turned into a tree, sorry, spoilers if you don't know the show, but right as we're getting to the part where all the villagers start singing, "Why we tell the story," all the power completely cuts out of the building. So it's kind of dark, just being lit with a little bit of sunlight coming through the windows. We all kind of look at each other, a bunch of kids ranging from like 6 years old up to 16. Like, what do we do? Well, one little girl decided that she was going to sing that song, whether the electricity and music was on or not. And she started out singing and everyone kind of just joined in. And it was a very beautiful a cappella moment where I don't know how we all got our notes, but we did. And the way it ended like that was such a community building experience because we were all singing and the people there watching were singing along to the little bits they could pick up on. And it just really showed me how theater is a community experience, not just I'm an actor on the stage. No, it's between the actors and the audience, and you can't have one without the other.
I absolutely love that. That's so wonderful. Thank you for that. Yes, Slaney.
I actually have a similar experience to JJ, which, yeah, harkens back to my high school days. We were at Mount Desert Island High School doing a all-white production of The Wiz, which, yes, was definitely wrong. And I didn't realize it was wrong until after I auditioned and fully gotten the role of Atta Pearl. And then I started to question whether or not the historical context of the show was appropriate for us to be doing. But, you know, what am I going to say when I'm a junior in high school? So I was playing Atta Pearl, and my entrance, I come out in a plume of smoke, you know, fog machine, impressive kind of, you know, and then the Atta Pearl dynamic is a juxtaposition to the showiness of it. So I come out on stage and to a packed audience and we're doing the scene. And suddenly I see all these lights flashing, you know, like kind of strobe lights flashing. And we're halfway through the scene and I can't recall ever seeing these lights during tech rehearsal. You know, I'm like, what's this new kind of effect that they're adding to Atta Pearl or whatever? And then our director comes in through the house and makes an announcement. Sorry, everyone, the fire alarm is going off and we have to evacuate the entire theater. So the entire audience had to get up and leave, and everyone on stage had to get up and leave immediately. Everyone went outside. It was in the middle of the winter. So they were waiting until the fire department came and shut off the fire alarm in our high school. And then, so about a half hour goes by and I'm new to it. I get a little emotional because I'm like, how are we going to get back on stage and do the scene over again? They've already seen all the scene. Like, how are we going to start it again? And our director was like, don't worry. No one, it's all fine. It's fine. And so in my kind of struggle to like keep it fresh or keep it interesting, I thought, well, if I can't have my fog machine entrance, you know, for Atta Pearl, I remember kind of like thinking, how could you scale it down? Like, and I kind of, you know, I was raised on Looney Tunes. So when we finally had the clear to go and everyone had sat back down, we started at my entrance and I wrote on a piece of paper with like a stick, poof. So I I came out with my entrance with a little poof card. And then it got, everyone was totally on board. Everybody forgot what had happened previously, that they had to go stand out in the cold. And we were back in it. And it is, like JJ said, it reminds you the community of theater and what people are there to experience is just live and raw and you know, adapting to your surroundings, really, and what's thrown at you. So I've always kind of carried that with me throughout.
That is amazing. Wow. Good for you. That is great. Way to turn a situation into humor. That's fabulous. Thank you. Kaya, I saw your hand up. Would you like to go?
Sure. It's a bit of a memory, but it's also like, I think, a little moment of gratitude. This year will mark 10 years since I did my first ever Fringe Festival, where I'm from in Cincinnati. And I never thought that I would be here. I never thought that I would be acting. And it's just crazy to me. And I'm just like really, really grateful that life happens just the way it's going to happen. You just kind of have to like sit back and, you know, let things unfold. And yeah, I'm just very grateful.
That is wonderful. Oh, I love that. Happy 10-year anniversary in this.
Thank you. And I will say it's like, it taught me, doing my first Fringe Festival, I just like kind of haphazardly applied and, you know, with like some semblance of like a story that I had in my idea or in my mind. And then it got accepted. So then I was like forced to finish it. And I never saw myself as like being capable of finishing a play. And I just think it's beautiful that, you know, when humans are called to do something or you have to do something, like something just happens deep inside of you and you make it happen.
Yeah.
It's like the biggest confidence boost ever, knowing that like if I need to do something and if I really need to do it, I'm gonna do it. And I have the capability to do that. And I think we all have that.
So well put, well put. Thank you for that. Yes, Gracie.
So I went to college at Reed College in Portland, Oregon. I grew up in New York, went there, and then I lived there for a little bit after college. And I was working with this theater company called Portland Experimental Theater Ensemble. And I remember it was like right after college, and I was friends with a lot of scientists who were like, I don't know, doing, you know, beakers, et cetera. I don't really know what they do, no. But they were very sweet. And I developed this devised piece through working with Portland Experimental Theater Ensemble. And it was a very strange, non-linear, experimental piece sort of about addressing your demons. And I like played this weird villain that spoke only in Frank Sinatra lyrics. And we were just like trying to get it up. And there was a bit of a like, what is this about? I don't know. And I have a lot of love for that piece, although I don't know if I'll ever be able to do it again. But then basically two friends that I had that didn't speak to each other anymore ended up coming on the same night. And then they like started talking again because they saw something in the show that made them think about addressing this past thing that they had gone through. And I didn't even know that was there, because to some extent I knew, like I did know what what we were going for with the show, but it was also an experimental piece. And we were just doing a lot of physical theater and blah, blah, blah. And then someone takes something from it and then like takes action in their own life. You know, like I just felt like, oh, like theater, you don't even have to know your message of the play. Like maybe you should, but like the audience can take whatever they want from it. And that was just really touching to me, that it also like brings people together that, you know, thought they wouldn't see each other again. So that felt really nice. And yeah, this is my first Fringe Festival. So I'm just so excited to be doing it in a group of diverse artists and to be able to see like all the other types of pieces that will inform each other and, you know, that we'll all get to see. So thank you.
What a wonderful memory. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Emil, yes.
Well, this is part of my show and this memory, and it wasn't necessarily a theater piece, but I was playing a character. And it was when I went to, when I was at college and I was giving a speech and I was in character and I was playing my father. And this is in the days when, I mean, schools are much more diverse now, but this is in the days when they were ultra white. And I show up on stage and they think, where's your leaf blower? Or are you going to serve me? Or are you, what are you doing here? Are we at the right graduation? And I just started talking like my father for like 5 minutes. And they were like stunned. And then I transformed and became them. And I got the biggest laugh I ever received in my life. And that's, I mean, it was comedic, but it was satirical. It was like this big tidal wave hit me. And that's why I never did theater after that, because I'd gotten it all in that one little bit. And then I realized years later that, oh, I got to get back to that. I got to get that again. And I've been doing fringes now for the last, I don't know, 6 years or so. Before we had the pandemic, that kind of shut us down. I had to do these kind of fringes, you know, on this thing, right? But now we're live. And I was at Under St. Mark's last year for the first time in 3 years live. And I'm coming back with sort of the same show, the germ of the same show. But I think about everything I do, and it goes back to that moment in college when I gave that, it was a speech, but I transformed, and it was a theatrical transformation.
That is amazing. I love it. Thank you for that. Penelope, I saw your hand up. Yes, please.
Okay. This one's kind of funny. I'm a dancer, and I have a pretty funny habit of being added into shows as a featured dancer and then sneaking my way up to like featured things. Like I was in Rent and then all of a sudden I'm doing the Seasons of Love solo, like, oops. But I was added into a production of Hairspray because they needed some dancers. And I was an eighth grader and they were like, we need you to be in the high schooler show. So I was like, I'm pulling up dance captain as an eighth grader. All these high schoolers are like, who's this chick? Whatever. We do the show, we're on stage, I'm one of the nicest kids in town. I think I was Fender, like, whatever. I'm on stage, Tracy and Penny don't enter for the gym dodgeball scene, and I'm standing there with a bunch of ensemble girls, and I'm like, this is my moment. So I took my moment, and I created a scene. And I started talking, and I think I said something along the lines of, well, did you guys hear about, like, what happened? And the other two girls were like, no. And I was like, well, when I went to the store, they were out of Ultra Clutch. And I know I went on for a minute or two about hairspray. And then I know I said something about taking all the other brands of hairspray, spraying it all over the store, accidentally lighting the store on fire and blowing it up, but everything being okay because my father was a lawyer. And then Tracy and Penny came on and hairspray continued. And no one ever addressed it again in the show. My character continued to be on the TV show after throwing a fit over there being no Ultra Clutch on the shelves. And my director still continued to cast me as lead, even though I improvised. But to be fair, that's so much better than awkward silence. I think that side character was so interesting. I think about her all the time. I hope she's well.
That is incredible. Before Gretchen,
don't leave me alone on stage.
Penelope Dean. I love that. Thank you for that. Well, bringing us home, Kristen Hoffman, what is your favorite theater memory?
So mine's actually not one particular moment. So I grew up in South Florida, Homestead, if you know it, what up the stead. And you know, I grew up not having money, not being introduced to the arts at all. My only experience of it was my high school theater experience. And believe it or not, Florida's high school theater scene kind of goes hard. They take the Thespian Honor Society very seriously. And every year we'd go to something called the Florida State Thespian Festival. I remember my first year was freshman year of high school. Mind you, again, I'd never done like I danced, like, you know, you grow up dancing as a kid, whatever. That was the most of my theater experience. But then when we landed in Tampa, it was just a whole town run by what felt like high schoolers doing theater. And I was like, what the heck is going on? One of the standout moments for me were like walking to see a show, because there are all these different events, like solo events, people doing pantomimes, group theaters, solo singing, one act festival, and like all of these different workshops. I just remember walking to one of the to the convention centers and seeing a random flash mob of kids singing Springtime for Hitler. I have no theater students. I was like, what the F is going on? What is this crazy thing? And I just see like my friends cracking up. So I was like, oh, this is normal here. Oh my God, I found my people. This is the place for me. And by the end of it, there was this huge like a award ceremony, because they judged us, which arguably really messed with my perspective of the arts for a while. I was like, yes, if I'm not a superior, then I am a poor. Not true. Everything is subjective. I had this crazy thought growing up. And then my troupe, 3637, we actually ended up winning the one act festival in this massive, like, I don't know, maybe 1,000 seat theater. I just remember them calling us up and everyone screaming in the audience. And we just like ran to this massive stage, and getting to stand on that stage, winning like with the pride of my ensemble and just being celebrated in this place of like fun weirdos who are just running around having a good time performing their hearts out. That just always sticks with me. Always sticks with me.
That is a fantastic memory. In fact, all of the memories were incredible. Thank you all so much for those. My final question for all of you is, if our listeners would like more information about your show or maybe about you, perhaps you'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so? Starting with our friends at Death of a Dandelion, JJ Ivy.
Hello. So to find out more information about me and my show, you can always visit my website, jjivey.com. That's jjivey.com.
How about everyone at Please Let Me Save You, Kaya?
Yeah, so we're a little bit basic. I would say the best way would be to follow me or my creative partner on Instagram. My name's Kaya Linkugel. It's a lot to spell. I'm honestly not going to spell it. My creative partner's name is Ariella Carmel. And you can follow us on Instagram. We'll be posting. We're making our new poster this week, so that'll be exciting. We'll have like a new show image to be able to offer. So yeah, that's it for now.
Wonderful. Penelope, why don't you tell us about the Climate Fables?
Hi, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, most social media platforms, TikTok, as Torch Ensemble, TorchEnsemble. And we are Patrick Bond, Penelope Dean, Luis Feliciano, and Kristen Hoffman. You can find all four of us on social media, but it's pretty easy to find us through the Torch Ensemble Instagram. We have our link tree there. You can check out our reviews from Edinburgh Fringe. You can check out some of our previous stuff. We make some videos. We do some things together. And we will probably have other performances besides this. So to follow us, to stay in tune, Torch Ensemble.
Amazing. Deborah, what about a series of wildfires?
Yeah, so my most, like, my best way is the old school. I have a website, DeborahDHarbin.com. So that's the best way to get me. I'll drop that in the chat too. But then also I'm on Insta at Deborah Harbin Productions. So that's another way you can find me.
Lovely. A Little Less Than Kind, how can we get a hold of you?
Hey, yeah, so our production company is Bluebird Theater Company, and you can follow us on Instagram at Bluebird Theater with an R-E, Co. And we have crowdfunding campaign to get a little more money, so you'll see that on the Instagram. and also our website. And then you can follow me personally, but I'll be posting more on Bluebird. And Slaney, if you want to say your Insta too.
Yes, my Instagram handle is at Slaney Rose. That's SlaneyRose.
And bringing us home on this, Emil, what about you?
Well, you know, I do have the domain amok.com. It's a little down right now, but you can try that, amok.com. I don't do Instagram as much. I am on Instagram, but at Emil Amok 1. Twitter, X, formerly known as Twitter, at Emil Amok, E-M-I-L-A-M-O-K. And then I do a thing on YouTube, so at Emil Amok 1. So I'm around. People can Google me and find me if they're really curious and interested. I'm doing the show again. I'm doing the show in Fresno this week, and then I'll be in Orlando. But I'm really looking forward to being at the Fringe in New York.
Wonderful. Well, I wanted to say thank you to all of you for taking the time to speak with me today, for sharing these incredible works. I am so excited to take them in personally at the festival. And I hope as many of our listeners as possible can do as well. All wonderful works. You should all be so proud of it. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew. This was lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
This was super fun. Thanks, y'all.
My guests today have been several of the amazing artists associated with the New York City Fringe Festival who were all performing at Under St. Mark's. The New York City Fringe Festival is happening April 3rd through the 21st at Under St. Mark's, The Wild Project, and 14Y Theater. Tickets and more information are available at frigid.nyc. Head over there and get them now. We also have some contact information for all of our guests and their shows, which we'll be posting on the episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But you do not want to miss this year's Fringe Festival. It's bigger than and better than ever. And these wonderful artists and their works are a testament to that. So check out the New York City Fringe Festival, April 3rd through the 21st. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, keep talking about the theater.
In the stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.